What do you want out of life? Wild success, shooting for the stars, or living a happier life? What is success, and how do you get it if you're mired in self-doubt and fear instead of being happier? That's our topic today, Happier Made Simple. Welcome to the Life Talk Show, sharing ideas for meaning, joy, and success with Randy Kay, Diana Hall, and Nikki Tombolides. Our mission is to initiate conversations that enrich and empower your life. And now, today's Life Talk Show. This is the Life Talk Show, sharing ideas for meaning, joy, and success. We are three pals who want to have conversations to enrich and empower your life. Thank you for being here. Today, we'll be talking about Happier Made Simple. I'm Randy Kay, by the way, and I just want to start by asking my buddies here, Diana Hall and Nikki Tombolides, about the pandemic. And if you guys were to think about anything that would connect the word happier to COVID-19, by way of introducing yourself to a listener who's maybe who doesn't know us yet, tell us a bit about yourself and then answer that question. How would you connect happier to COVID-19?
So I guess for those who don't know me, Diana Hall, and I am principal and owner of Interiors by Diana. Been in business for about 20 years. And I'm also a professor at Pear College teaching interior design. I'm a mom of two children, Justin, age 26, just turned 26, getting married in June. Woo! And woo! Yeah, so thrilled about it, to his beautiful bride-to-be, Charlotte, and my daughter, Brittany, who graduated last May from University of Miami and is living in Miami.
Adorable.
And then my husband, John, who we both reside in Madison, Connecticut, shoreline town, and in a new home. So that is me in a nutshell. And if I were to think of the word happier or happy and COVID-19, the one most important thing that comes to mind to me is family. And for me, the happiest moments of COVID-19, believe it or not, were the first part of the pandemic, because I had both of my children home. So it was a gift to me because they're out of the house, and it brought them home and brought all of us together. So for me, that was the happiest of the moments during the pandemic.
Awesome. Nikki.
Well, for me, I would say, I'm not going to go through my bio. It's too long. But all I'm going to say is it made me connect with people that I didn't connect for a long time. And I helped people, which I love to do, in a way that I was not able, I didn't have time to do previously, because we're too busy with everyday life. And like simple things, helping a neighbor, making a dish for someone. So it helped me. The business was compromised because I run a house cleaning business, and it was compromised a great deal. But, you know, I did a lot of teaching. I pivot. So it worked for me in a very strange way. And I also start writing articles and everything else. So it was challenging, and I started taping my cleaning segments. It worked for me. How about you, Randy?
I have to say that for me, now I'm a grandmother of three little people who were born within 2.5 years. So when we were kicking into the period of isolation, my daughter had a 4-year-old, a 2.5-year-old, and a 1.5-year-old. And so I think the biggest thing for us, because I do feel lucky enough to live near them, is that I was so, so grateful that those kids had each other, because they had people to play with. And that just brought me to a place of gratitude for them, that as loaded as sibling relationships can be, and we all know that, and we've done shows about it, I was grateful for them that they had each other. So That was a happier for me. And I wrote a book.
Wonderful. And there's something else that why we're here all gathered together making a show special about you, because we're kind of flipping the roles this time for this particular show with Diana, and we're becoming the host and we're making you the guest. Woo. To talk about your book, Happier Made Simple. And I can say today we're so excited to share with you all a much needed show for our times on how we best enjoy a happier life, diving in our own Randy K, that would be you, your new book, appropriately titled Happier Made Simple. We have so much to unload with Randy. I can't wait to ask about her secret, Not So Anymore, Recipe on Happiness, How to Get There Simply. Now, Diana, you have to do a little bit about Randy, which I don't know if you can do a little, but we'll try.
I would love to. So Randy will not say this about herself, but it is my pleasure to introduce her, who is our co-host and friend of the Life Talk show. And Randy is a loved radio personality, a motivational speaker, a stage actor who in her spare time is also a voice talent and audiobook narrator. And I don't know how you do all this and be a grandmother, but you do a fantastic job of that as well. But now as well, she's an author. She wrote the best-selling book titled Ben Behind His Voices, One Family's Journey from Chaos of Schizophrenia to Hope. And now her second book that Nikki just mentioned, Happier Made Simple, Choose Your Words, Change Your Life. It reached number one as an international bestseller status on launch day. And Randy, this is perfect timing, as we just talked about the pandemic and people wanting to feel happier in their life. So I'm so excited to hear all about your book.
Thank you so much. So specifically, do you have a specific question or should I just start talking?
Okay. I had a couple of interesting years and I was mastering the art of Coco Van while you, Randy, was writing a book, a much needed book, I may say, Happier Made Simple, Choose Your Words, Change Your Life. Why did you write Happier Made Simple?
Okay, so that's a big why, and I'm very impressed that you mastered Coco Van. I was just I was just very impressed that I cooked at all. So this was kind of like, I know Diane is a great cook, and you know, I'm just kind of like, what are we ordering from takeout tonight? But anyway, I did manage to cook during, but now I'm bored with it. But anyway, I wrote the book because a lot like all of us, and we, you know, anyone who's followed our show knows some of the things we've been through. We've all been through stuff. And specifically for me, I would have to say the hardest challenge for me was when my son got ill with an illness that has no cure, and it's an illness of the brain. And when I wrote my book 10 years ago about our family's experience, I wrote it because at the time, and still true, it does end in hope, even though the illness has no cure. But still, it's tough because living with somebody with a mental illness is like a game of chutes and ladders. Like you think you've climbed up and then you go down, and it's not easy, not easy with any illness. But I would, in my speaking tour, a lot of people would say, my God, how do you stay so positive? And I started talking about the fact that it's not so much what happens to you, but what you tell yourself about it. And obviously, trauma is trauma, and not everything is happy every second of every day. But once all is said and done, what's really important is what we tell ourselves about it. And I began speaking about that and eventually framed it into an easily remembered acronym for 7 core concepts, each with a very simple phrase that says what I tell myself. This is all self-talk. It's not advice to other people except, you know, what you can tell yourself. And the reason I wrote it, because there's a million happiness books out there, is that I wanted to write a lighthearted book with stories, easy to read, easy to digest, where at the end of it, you're like, oh, I can do that. Seven phrases, I'll keep them handy and see which one works, as opposed to me who cannot meditate, can't make it through a yoga class. I'm terrible at gratitude lists. I never keep it up. I love the idea of affirmations, but I never remember them. And so I wanted to write an accessible book about being happier.
So, all right. So
lovely.
You mentioned a lot of the challenges of that for you, but what was the most challenging part of writing this book?
Of writing it? I think the most challenging part, because a lot of people want to write a book. I have been married for 12 years to my second husband, and he is always like, I'm going to write a book. And I'm like, well, what are you going to write about? Oh, that's the problem. I don't know what to write about. So it's, you know,
we've all been there. Right?
Yeah, we've all been there. We've all got a book in us. We've all got an idea in us. If I had a book for every time I thought I wanted to write a book, I'd have written 10 books. But I really believe that when the idea is strong enough and the time is right, that the book almost writes itself through you. I know that's a little woo-woo, you know, but I do believe that to be true. And this was an idea that was in my head for a long time, and I created a few speeches about it, but I never just had the time to write a book or the inclination to do the work. You know, I know with what you guys do, professor, designer, cleanliness expert, masters in business. Like, it took a lot of hard work to get to where you got to, and writing a book is hard work. And I just was overwhelmed with, how do I get this on paper? And I wrote an outline and I let it sit for a year. And then I wrote a few chapters and I let it sit for a year. And that's why it was difficult. And with COVID, I was pretty much trying to keep my daughter's family as sane as possible. And then I had what some people would say was a tough time, but for me, it became an opportunity. My work as an actor and a voiceover talent and a speaker slowed down a lot because of COVID.
Yeah.
And I was, even the audiobooks, for, you know, December is often a lull. And for the first time in a long time, I got up and went, I don't have a million things to do today. And I thought, you know, I'm not making any money, but if there's ever a time I'm going to get this book written, this is the time. So the gift of lack of gigs gave me the gift of time to get the book done. And I brought in some partners to help me do that because I'm built for partnership. So
how long from the beginning to completion?
Well, when are we counting from? Are we counting from the outline 3 years ago? Or are we counting from when I said I'm going to really write this book? Let's just say it sat in limbo for a while, but when I really decided to do it, 30 days. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Yeah. Because I am the kind of person, I don't know if you guys ever procrastinate. Do you ever procrastinate?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So we're not perfect, any of us. And I thought, you know, it's easy to put a project off. And it's only until we have a fire to put out that we're like, you know, the moving truck is coming, or the client wants the design, or the person needs their house cleaned. Like, we have a deadline, we do great. So I saw this thing online. It was a finish your book in 30 days. It would turn out to be 30 business days. So it's 6 weeks. And it was a class. And I took the webinar and it made sense. And I signed up for the class. And the first thing he had us do was create a negative consequence so that if we didn't finish the book in the 30 business days, we would have to do something terrible. And so, yes, because he said in his research, negative consequences can sometimes be more motivating than positive consequences.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Huh. So I thought, all right, no, I'm open to that. So I won't say what political party I'm for, but my vow to myself was if I didn't meet my deadline, I would have to contribute to a cause I don't believe in.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah. So that really worked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was my negative carrot that I was dangling. And then the guy, you know, it was just sort of every day he would send us a task. Today, you have to sit for 30 minutes and write without getting up or whatever it is. And I just followed the process. And before I knew it, it got done. It got done. So, and then once I had it done, it was about getting it published. But what I really needed to do, and what I hope anybody listening will take advice about if it works for you, or just a lesson, is that if you're not doing it on your own, maybe you're not meant to be on your own to get it done. By having accountability and making a deadline with a clear consequence, that really helped me get the job done.
Yep. So I wanted to mention to everyone listening, go get the book. The 7 core principles, I have them laminated in my wallet. All of you know from years ago, and I carry them with me every day.
I have to tell you, Nikki, that the fact that you did that, because I did present this at a happiness club, and you, God bless you, you laminated the 7 core principles and phrases, which have changed slightly, but not a lot. And you inspired me so much that on my Happier Made Simple website, I've created a mug and some notebooks and some phone cases with the core phrases on them, so that people can drink their coffee out of the 7 core phrases.
What a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, because it's like, they're just very simple, and you know, we'll get to them, I would imagine, but it's just, I can't tell you how many people nod their heads when I say, I just can't meditate. And everyone's like, yeah, I can't either. Thank God somebody said it. And if you can meditate, God bless you. And I admire you so much. It hasn't yet worked for me. I'm a more of a quick fix kind of gal. And these are things that help me in times of need.
So I have a question.
Okay, go ahead, Nikki.
No, Diana, go, hon.
Oh, no. Well, I would love, I'm sure there are listeners dying to hear about these 7 principles. So I think this is just a good time to tell us about them.
Okay. I'll run down
the teaser.
Okay. Here's the teaser. So the 7 core phrases spell out the word breathe. And each of those letters stands for a principle. So I'll just run them down quickly. B, if you want to do an acronym, if you want to do a sentence, it would be real and engage in appreciation and trust with humor and esteem. So, but let's go. B is for being, and the core phrase, which is something I say to myself probably 20 times a day, which helps to ground me, is just be here now. Like, I didn't make that phrase up, but it's just a phrase that reminds me, and this is otherwise known in the happiness world as mindfulness. But for me, the trigger is just be here now. I'm waiting for the microwave to heat up my heating pad, and I'm sitting and going, oh, 3 minutes is so long. And I'm just like, be here now. And it triggers, anytime we use words, they trigger us they send us down a different road. So be here now is my phrase that works for me for mindfulness. R is for reality. And that's especially when we wish things were different, but they're not. And I just say, it is what it is. Again, I didn't make it up. I'm just framing it as the R in reality. E is something I feel so strongly about. E is for engagement. This feeling, and nothing has brought it home more than this last 2 years of being isolated from each other, and engagement. The phrase I use is, we're all connected. Just to remember, if I look at the barista who got my name wrong in Starbucks or whatever, and I could be mad about it, but I'm like, you know what? We're all connected. This is a person who's working hard. I'm a person who works hard. We all make mistakes. It just leads to more connectedness and forgiveness. A is for appreciation, or some people call it gratitude. And my phrase is, this is good. this works to savor a good moment or to sometimes reframe a not so good moment. And again, these are words for self-talk. You never want to go up to someone whose dog just pooped on their shoes or something and go, oh, that's a really good thing that happened. Like, you don't want to say it to somebody else. This is something to say to yourself when you're ready to hear it. T is for trust. And that's kind of seeing the bigger picture. And that is just all will be well. Trusting the universe. For some people, it's having faith in God, however you want to phrase it for yourself. For me, I just say all will be well. I may not be able to see it now, but eventually in the big picture, all will be well. And I use that when I need it. H is for humor. As a morning personality and a speaker who uses the ridiculousness of her life to make people laugh on stage, it all begins with curiosity. And that phrase is, isn't that interesting? And that leads you to just more forgiveness and more. What I learned in morning radio is that and I'm not talking trauma or tragedy. I'm just talking the heel on your shoe broke on the way down the aisle, you know, things like that. Eventually, it's going to be a funny story. So I just started to go, isn't that interesting? I wonder why that happened. And then laugh sooner. And the last one is for esteem. And this is the one that gets me to sleep when I'm having anxiety, as we all do sometimes, or you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't go back and everything that's ever been wrong with your life comes into your head. And the phrase I use that really helps me is, whatever happens, I'll handle it somehow. It's just knowing, or just if you like three words, I'll handle it. I say that before I step on the scale in the morning. Whatever the number is, I'll handle it somehow. It just reduces the anxiety. So those are the seven core phrases, and they're handy and they're quick, and hopefully they're helpful, used as needed, depending on the situation.
I love it. And, you know, and I'm hearing a lot of what you're saying is, you know, just a lot of positive self-talk, right? Mm-hmm. Not a lot of negative chatter in your brain. And having control over that by positive self-talk, am I hearing some of that in what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And Nikki, I see you have your hand up. So guys, if you're listening, we are recording this on Zoom, and this is the way, because we're not in a radio station at this particular moment. But so Nikki, your question is obviously next, but just to answer Diana's question, I'm very clear in this book that two things. One, there is such a thing called toxic positivity. And that's these people who always want to make everything better for everybody else. And sometimes it backfires. It's not about being happy all the time. It's never even the goal to be happy all the time. And positive self-talk is for when you're ready for it. It's when you're on the verge. You know, if you're something bad, just, I don't even want to say bad things out loud, but if something really difficult happened, you're not going to jump straight to, hey, it is what it is. This is good. All will be well. Like it works when you've absorbed the pain to an extent, and then you're having the choice of, okay, do I continue to drive myself crazy, or do I find a way to move forward down a different path? And that's when the positive self-talk can be useful. But there are times in life when we're not supposed to be positive. I had a bad day this week. It was just kind of like, not a bad day, but I had some doubts. I had a mood. I was going through some stuff.
Yeah.
And it was just, I wasn't ready to tell myself any of these core phrases. Except it is what it is, which was an acceptance of my own mood. You know,
right.
I'm not having a good day, and that's okay. Uh-huh. I can have a not so good day, and eventually it's going to make sense. And you know what I did? I went and washed my car, and I felt 100 times better. You know, so positive self-talk doesn't fix everything. But I think when you're on the fence between continuing to go nuts and, you know, getting to a better place, that is what has helped me to stay balanced. Nikki.
I just wanted to ask you about your favorite passage from the book. But before I ask you, I'm going to mention my favorite passage from your book is a personal story of yours when you talk about a snowy day when the kids were sleeping in the house. Can you take us to that day?
Oh, sure. That's the story that opens the book. And every chapter, by the way, starts with a story. There's stories of how I found out my birth father is not my birth father. You know, my dad is not my real dad. You guys know that story. There's a story about my son's illness. There's a story. There's a story for everything. And the story that starts the book was, paint the picture, I was a single parent. My husband had abandoned the family. That's one of the stories in the books of raising my kids without child support and the alcoholic husband that just disappeared. We never found him. And I was raising my kids alone, living in a house with a kamikaze driveway, somebody called it. It was down, very steep, down from street level. And my children were totally dependent on my income. And my mother was dying and my father was sick and my kids were asleep. And there was like 3 feet of snow in the driveway in that year when it snowed again and again and again. And there I am with my little shovel saying, I can't get to work unless I shovel the driveway. And so it was dark, it was cold, and I had to shovel the driveway. And the words going through my head were not positive. It was like, this isn't fair. Why don't I have a husband? Why did he leave me? I wish my kids were old enough to help me. Nobody's really, you know, appreciating what I do. And like all those, all the negativity was building on itself. I'll never get this done. It's too hard. And then suddenly I just stopped and I thought about Christopher Reeve. And this is going back some years, but this was the first year that he had, you know, he's paralyzed from the neck down. And and I thought, you know, how many millions of dollars would Christopher Reeve give for this gift of being able to shovel his driveway? And just that shift of words, telling myself different words.
Powerful.
I just stood there and then suddenly I'm like, I'm the luckiest woman on the face of the planet. And suddenly that shift, it sent me down an entirely different road of words. Suddenly it was like, I am so lucky my arms move. I'm so lucky I'm strong enough to shovel snow. I'm so lucky I have a house. I'm so lucky that my alcoholic husband left because things could be worse if he were here. You know, suddenly I began with every shovelful thinking how lucky I was. And either way, I would have gotten back to the top of the driveway. But I got to the top of the driveway tired, but triumphant. And otherwise, I would have gotten to the driveway glad to have it done, but seething with resentment. And I would rather not be that second person. And it was all in the word choice. And that's when I realized that what I tell myself about what happened here, if I had 16 years between husbands, what I call relationship high school, which was sadly not in high school, but I had a lot of things to learn about relationships. And I learned to say to myself when a relationship didn't work out, I always meet new men instead of relationships always end for me. It's even being careful how you use the word always. When I started saying, you know, I always meet new men, it's going to be fine. I did. So that's the power of words.
So let me ask you. So, you know, when you think of the word happiness, you think of somebody who walks around smiling all the time and always feeling happy and always feeling joyful. But my takeaway from I'm going to ask you, because that's not necessarily what you're implying when you're saying happier, happiness. What do you mean by that emotion of happy or happiness or happier?
Yeah, thank you. I deliberately chose happier because, first of all, I don't think the goal is to be happy all the time. That would be boring. There's an old Twilight Zone episode where somebody didn't have a great life. And then after he dies, he goes to this place. He thinks he's gone to the bad place. But he's there and he discovers he's in the good place because everything's going great. Every bet he places wins. And he loves it at first. He can't believe how lucky he is to get to this place where everything is fantastic. And after about 3 days, he's like, I hate it. I hate it. It's like everything's so predictable. And he asks his guardian angel or whatever to send him to the bad place. And the guardian angel says, you are in the bad place. like things being happy, 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 happy all the time is not only not the goal, it's not only not possible, but it's not the goal. We are here to experience the whole spectrum of experience and feelings. Where our word choice comes in is, again, when we're sitting on the fence between making ourselves feel miserable about what life is or making ourselves feel grateful about what life is. And, you know, right now I'm thinking of all those people in Ukraine and how they are getting through the upheaval in their lives. And I'm not going to go down that road for long, but, you know, you get it. I mean, they say comparing is despairing. And I have a whole other, I have three more chapters at the end, and one of them is about comparison. And sometimes comparison works for us when we go, well, at least I'm not, you know, doing that. So happier is not the goal. Being happier has been examined in human philosophy and ethics and morals forever. I have quotes in my book from Aristotle and Shakespeare and all these people trying to get there. I don't think happiness should be forced on anybody. And the worst thing you can say to someone who's having a hard time is, oh, just smile. Like, that is not what you're supposed to say to someone else. But sometimes I will say it to myself. And if I'm ready to hear it from myself and I do smile, it does work. But it's not forced joy. It's not, oh, you're less than happy, then that's terrible. It's just focusing. Life is what this, you asked, one of my favorite things from the book is that life is what you highlight. So at the end of the day, like at the end of the day, what are you going to highlight about that day? And if you take any piece of text and you highlight all the positive words in it, that's all you're going to see. If you take that same page and you highlight all the negative words, that's all you're going to see. So I think at the end of the day, if we highlight our lesson, you know, what I say, highlight the best, learn from the rest. That's my little quotable from that chapter. So I don't think we should make ourselves crazy with this pressure that we're supposed to be positive all the time. There's a term for that, a toxic positivity. So yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. And what I'm hearing from you, and correct me if I'm wrong, that happiness is a practice and happiness is a choice. But happiness doesn't necessarily come natural to most people.
I think it does. If you look at children, I mean, you know, we've all had children in our lives in various ways. And right now I have little children in my life, and their emotions run the spectrum from, they love to be happy, but they don't strive to be happy every second of every day. So I do think that choice, and then, you know, we're all familiar with the Happiness Club and Lionel, and I do believe that happiness is a choice, or being happier in the moment is a choice. If you're in a place where you can listen to what you're telling yourself and tell yourself something different about it.
So practice that.
To practice. And it is a practice. And, you know, I've gotten pretty good at laughing quicker than I would have, like a story that maybe I need a week for it to settle and then it'll be funny. Well, like the story of finding out my dad isn't my dad through a DNA test. Like, that wasn't funny immediately, but there was a moment of laughter coming from shock, probably, when we found out that my brothers are really my half brothers. But I also had this sense, because I do practice being aware of my self-talk and replacing it when necessary. And all those years on morning radio, turning frustrating situations into funny stories the next day. I would say you're right, Diana. I think it is a practice that we can practice and get better at laughing quicker, connecting more thoroughly, accepting each other, not tolerating, I don't like that word, but accepting each other and all our differences, being loving toward each other, appreciating a sunset, appreciating that weird 5 minutes of hail that I had out my window, and just going, well, this is interesting. So I think it is a practice. But I'm not a fan of toxic positivity and people who feel like they need to force you into being joyful. Nikki, your hand's up again. I see it.
Well, so just out of curiosity, how did you come up with the title then? Because you chose Happier. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious about how you came up with that and the title.
So Happier as opposed to Happiness. And I think I've explained that. And then Made Simple was because if you go to Amazon or any bookstore and you go to the shelf where there's books on happiness, they're all very, very, not all, many of them I would open up and go, oh my God, this is too much. It's just too much. I never get through this. And so many people, this I know from research, will buy a book of self-improvement and read a chapter and put it back on the shelf. And I wanted to write a book that was simple, that people could go, oh, I know what she means. Yeah. People have said to me, you know, I read the first two chapters and I put it to use right away and it's made a difference. That's what I love to hear. So I really did want it happier to be made simple by just here are the seven phrases. And I put them right on page one. Try them, see if they work for you. If they don't work, maybe you want to tweak them. If they do work, here's why they work. Oh, and here's another story. And if you want to know more, great. If you don't, move on to the next chapter. I wanted to make it accessible to those of us who sit through a yoga class with one eye on the clock and just find rolling up their hands with, why is happiness so complicated? I don't want it to be complicated. Just tell me what to say to myself. And that's, I wrote it in with that in mind.
So can you give us a teaser? Just a teaser or a passage from your book?
Like some quotes? Sure. I just want to make sure that Nikki, there you are. Did you have something you wanted to say?
No, I just wanted to ask you about picking up with Diana's fabulous question, which I loved when she talked about happiness, because, you know, a lot of us are not happy naturally. And I thought your book gives you the outline of how to help you, so to speak, the recipe of happiness. And it works. It really works for me. As you said, from the very few first pages, you can have the recipe right there and then read the stories.
I have a question for you when you're done. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I highly recommend it.
Thank you. So my question to you is, because you've carried these seven phrases with you, and I'm putting you on the spot and I'm sorry, but you've carried these seven phrases with you for a few years. Can you give me an example of when one of them was helpful to you?
Yes. Actually, one comes to mind that you guys, I think it will go maybe to positive toxicity. I used to go to Dunkin' Donuts to get my coffee, and 20 people were standing in line. And there was this woman would come every time, the same time, and cheerful and run around telling to us how happy she is. I really was so annoyed by this woman. She was really pissing me off.
Yep.
At the point that we start talking about her, the folks in line, and we were like, what is her problem? And you would think somebody being happy and cheery at first thing in the morning. And she's like, are you guys loving this? And we're like, no. Mm-hmm. It was so funny. And finally, I applied your principle, finding the humor, and I found the humor in it.
That's great, because that's exactly, if you were going to ask me what phrase would apply, I would go, that woman seems to need everybody to be happy. Isn't that interesting? And that kind of leads you to maybe just having a sense of humor about it, or just wondering why she feels she needs to be that way, because we're all connected. And there, you know, again, we don't want to turn anybody into that.
Yeah.
So a teaser, because I know we're actually running out of time here. So a teaser that I would say, I'm going to just a couple of quotes that people have told me they really like about that. So I'll give you one, and I'll tell you how it played out this week for me on the day after my not so easy day. And this is from the book, and it says, never underestimate the beauty of small encounters. So I am a big believer that some people are meant to be in your life in a big way, and other people are meant to be in your life in a small way, and it all has value. So I was at the library this week where I truly, if I need an oasis and I don't want to spend any money, I just go to the library. And I'm so grateful that we're able to go to the library again. I'm just sitting in a chair, reading a copy of Real Simple magazine because I pitched an article to them and I wanted to read it. And I put my mask on because the woman in the armchair about 6 feet away had her mask on. I wanted to be courteous. We're all connected, core phrase number three. And so I'm reading my book and she's reading her book. And then she says, excuse me. And she takes her phone and she says, is this you? And there's my picture on the phone. And she recognized me from a speech I gave like 5 years ago. And she said, I loved your speech. I said, well, thank you so much. And then we got to talking. She's a special ed teacher, but she calls it additional needs, not special needs, at which I love. Again, a word change can be everything. And we just got to talking about appreciation and the concepts in the book. And she said, yeah, I love appreciation because I call it a moment of delight in every day. I look for a moment of delight in every day. And she wasn't trying to push this on me. She was just sharing what works for her. And I'm like, oh my God, I love that. Like if you just take a minute and I can walk. For me, I went through a period of paralysis when I couldn't walk to my mailbox. So every time I walk to my mailbox, I'm like, I'm having a moment of delight, you know? So anyway, that was such a lovely
thing. Gratefulness.
It was. But this woman gave me such a gift by just engaging with me for a lovely 10-minute conversation. And that is a perfect example of never underestimate the beauty of small encounters, how much we all mean to each other. We are truly all connected. And we need to remember that in this world. Another thing, I'll just, because there's not too many teasers, but I want to talk about admitting when you're wrong, because that is, and it's something we're not going to give details, but the three of us went through this week as we were trying to plan this show and we had a few disagreements and the moment when I said, you know, I could be wrong about that. And I think, you know, we've all been able to say that to each other because we're close.
Yeah. Yep.
And that was big. That was eye-opening for me. I'm not going to speak for you two, but it was like, we're fine. We're, you know, we can disagree and be fine. And so I say in the book, like I'll say
it's
I'm
all
wrong.
Good.
Yeah. When I'm, it's all good. But also when you're wrong, you're wrong. So say you're wrong, you know, and admitting when you're wrong is it opens the door into being in the human race. Like, welcome to the human race. Nobody's right all the time. So come on in, the water's fine. So that's another one of the previews.
I agree.
And the last thing I'll just leave you with is that whatever happens, I'll handle it somehow. How many times do we say, oh, I couldn't stand it if, oh, this, oh, I don't think I could live if this, you know, can each of you name something that you didn't think you could stand and you did?
Oh, goodness. Well, I can say probably most immediately it was a situation having to do with my business, and I had to make a decision one way or the other. And I thought if I didn't just move forward and, you know, accept what is, then I might lose this opportunity. So I didn't know that I could handle it or stand or withstand it, but so far so good. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to this, self-talk, because I can constantly say to myself, you know, or come up with all of these things are just that are going to make it so difficult to withstand the situation. And rather than do that, I'm just turning it around. And, so I think that's most immediately, I think that would be the situation where I, you know, so far
right.
I've been able to withstand what I thought would be the possible situation.
Yeah. And if the situation turns differently from what you planned, you're still going to handle it.
Because
you've handled everything. You've handled in the last year, a move to a new town. Mm-hmm. You know, your children leaving, your children coming back, COVID, you know, decorating your home, the fear of a hurricane knocking your house down. I mean, look at what you've handled. And we forget that. We always think, oh, I'm not strong enough to handle it. Look at what you've done. Nikki, I know some of the things you've been through. You've handled all that. you'll handle whatever the next thing is. I mean, do you want to share one instance or is that too personal?
Well, it's no, actually it's every day, you know, it's handling, well, it's handling every day, being a better person, improving yourself. It's every day as I feel even 5 minutes ago, I was not the same person as I am now. So it's just self-improvement and working hard. And, you know, life is challenging. Life is humbling, humbles you. Life humbles you. And if you, as you said, you don't accept your mistakes or you don't, you're not open for new ideas, new ways of doing everything, whether it comes to my business or whether it comes to my relationships, it matters. So that's the challenge every day we all face, I think. And to me, it's, of course, as you all know, it's my father's tragic death, and I still can't overcome it because it's 20 plus years now, because you cannot handle somebody dying from, you know.
Yeah. I heard two things about grief this week from another author, the author of a book called I Still Try to Catch His Eye. And I went to a speech and he said, you don't get, and this could be a topic for a whole other show, so I'll just leave this for you because of what you brought up. You never get over grief and you don't even get through grief. You carry grief. And I thought that was beautiful. You carry it. You always carry it because your father's gone 20
years. It never leaves you. It just changes form, but it's always there.
Right. Exactly. So we're running out of time. And even though you interviewed me, I'm going to ask each of you to, if you thought, well, first I'll tell people what the title of the book is, where they can find it. Then we're each going to end with one.
Yes,
final
please
word.
Do.
So it's called Happier Made Simple. Choose your words, change your life. It is not yet in bookstores, but you can get it on Amazon in hardcover, Kindle, or audiobook. And yes, you can get it from the audiobook on Audible and other places where you get it. The website is happiermadesimple.com, and that's where you can find the mugs and the notebooks and stuff like that and links to the book. So one final word, as we've spoken about being happier, more simply today. Nikki, I know you have one. What's your one final word?
Mine, I know you mentioned it in your conversation just a few minutes ago, smile. I think the way the curve on your face goes, it matters.
Okay.
I say smile is my favorite word for today.
Okay, Diana?
Well, during this period of COVID, the phrase social distancing is everywhere, every day, all over the place. You hear it multiple times a day. And so I understand the necessity of social distancing during the pandemic. But for me, a two-word phrase is better together.
Oh, I love that one. I love that one.
Love that.
And I will say that I think I'm just going to go with my first thought, which is self-talk, because the words you tell yourself are actually represent everything you think those words mean, mm-hmm. and the right word can send you down a completely different path. So I just want to invite you to stay tuned for more shows at the Life Talk Show. As always, our intention is to enrich and empower your life. You can find us on Facebook. We have a group, just The Life Talk Show. You can find our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And we're happy to hear your show ideas, comments. We read them all. Stay well, be safe, be happier. Signing off, Randy, Diana, and Nikki.
You've been listening to The Life Talk Show. If you have an idea for a future topic, would like to be a guest or a sponsor of our show, or just tell us what you think, please email us at info@thelifetalkshow.com. Our Twitter handle is @LifeTalkShow, and our Facebook page is The Life Talk Show, sharing ideas for meaning, joy, and success. The Life Talk Show with Randy, Diana, and Nikki. The Life Talk Show. Join us.